Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, the Utes get a big win over the UCLA Bruins. And we look ahead as Utah takes on the Trees of Stanford. I'm Cameron, and I got Ryan.
What's up, Ute Nation?
And Scott.
What is up, boys?
What is up is Utah is on the leaderboard for the South.
With a two-game lead.
Commanding lead.
And all the tiebreakers we need.
Let's hope.
I kind of want to rewind. After that San Diego State game, this team is in such a different place than it was a month ago. Listening to that podcast, we were hoping Utah could just
get bowl eligible.
Yes.
Maybe
get bowl eligible.
No, we be no. The middle we of were the hoping the offensive line could block a guy.
Good
what
point.
What a transformation that this football team has gone through, and then a lot of that credit has to go to the offensive line.
Oh,
they
big
are
time.
Night and day different, and I just wonder, like, why. Why did it take so long? Because this year was definitely worse than in years past, right? But you've seen it year over year under Harding. The offensive line is a little slow to get going out of the gates. But this year it was definitely accentuated with how bad they were early. And it's crazy to me how they can go from such a poor unit early to really playing at a high level right now.
And it's not necessarily an instance where all five guys are playing all the time. I mean, there's been injuries all over the board, and there's guys coming in, and they're still working well together and making plays.
We saw that this week with Ford getting moved to the left guard.
And the right guard, back to the left guard.
Oh, he did get moved over to the right for one play. Injury.
No, but I'll tell you, they and Ford, who took a lot of the criticism early on, you know, his play has drastically improved as well. So just that unit as a whole, and credit to Jim Harding, because obviously a lot of the praise right now is going towards Cam Rising, and rightfully so. But the reason Cam can do a lot of what he's doing is because of what this offensive line is doing, and what they just did to UCLA is really impressive. 290 yards on the ground.
Where UCLA was giving up under 100.
Under 100.
I think there were 98 yards a game on the season prior to the Utah game. But I think it's because of that why Cam's having so much success is because of that running attack that Utah's been doing. They're having to kind of bring guys in the box. It's letting the receivers have more one-on-one matchups, letting guys get more.
Receivers are getting the ball?
What? It's all together, right? It's one is aiding the other as far as the run and the pass. And I, to your point, Scott, it's all starting with the trenches and the offensive line, night and day difference. And I mean, what they're doing is remarkable.
No, it's phenomenal. I mean, and Tavion Thomas, again, he's a part of it. I mean, you can just go through and you can just name guys at every position and that are playing at such a high level. But finally, we're getting Tavion Thomas, who we expected out of fall camp. He's playing at a high level. He's holding on to the ball. He's
Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week this
week. Yeah, I mean, 6.7 yards per carry on 24 attempts. 4 touchdowns. I mean, he dominated that game. And, I mean, that's why he's your starter. Pledger, obviously, still getting opportunities. and he's coming in and he's spelling him a little bit. But it's the Tavian Thomas show at this point moving forward.
And credit to Thomas, because he had those fumble issues at the beginning of the year. He's worked on that, and the coaching staff never lost faith in him. They kept getting him in, still kept getting his reps, and now he's taking advantage of that. The thing I love about TJ Pledger is when he comes in, he finished UCLA off of 61 yards himself.
And he would have had a touchdown if he could have, if he didn't lose his feet.
But I think it just goes back to, this is such a different team than a month ago. And it's remarkable the way they've been able to turn around and turn around so quickly against the conference. It's not like they were able to turn it around against a lesser opponent like an FCS or something. They're doing it in games that matter in the Pac-12, and they're leading the South not by default because they've gone out and earned it.
Yeah, I mean, over these last four games, they've scored 42, 35, 34, 44 points. And over that same span, those last four games, they're over 450 yards in all four of those games. I mean, that's in 2019, we didn't even do that with Tyler Huntley and the offense that we had that was really rolling at that point. And you're doing this with a young Tavian Thomas. You're doing this with a young offensive line and with a very young and inexperienced Cam Rising at the quarterback position.
And against some stout defenses. I mean, going back to ASU.
Essentially the top contenders of the South.
Yeah.
Between USC, UCLA, and Arizona State. So it's really impressive what this offense, and a lot of credit, again, goes to Andy Ludwig, because he's the one that really threw a pretty shaky and ugly start. He, too, along with Harding, has kind of righted the ship. And you're seeing improvement from Cam Rising. You're seeing, obviously, Cam Rising, just in general, he's just a very confident kid. And I just think that's just his nature, his personality. But you're seeing he's playing within the offense of what Ludwig is putting together week in and week out. And I just think Ludwig is doing a really good job of putting the strengths of Cam Rising into play and allowing him to just go out and just play.
I think the number one stat, if you look at this offensive unit as a whole, what they're being able to do is third down efficiency. If you talked about, remember we talked about in the first couple games of the season, they were going about 30% on converting third downs. This past game, 8 of 12. It's phenomenal, the differences that they're doing in these little things that are adding up throughout the game.
Well, and two, I think part of that is they only had 12 third downs, I mean, which means they're picking up first downs on first and second down. They're not getting to third down as much as they were earlier in the season.
Well, earlier in the season, not only were you getting to third down consistently, you were in third and long, third and seven, third and 12 consistently, right? Whereas now, how many times last game was it third and two, third and one? And
a lot of that time it was second and two or second and three. Makes it easier to call plays and to make plays on those when you've got two plays to pick up a minimal number of yards.
Well, and especially in the fourth quarter when Utah was just trying to drain clock and get out of there, UCLA knew we were going to run. Everybody in the stadium knew we were going to run, and Tavian was still getting 7 to 8 on first down. Which again, just opens up the playbook, and obviously in that situation, you know, they weren't really going to pass unless they absolutely had to because they wanted to keep that clock moving. But overall, what that does for the offense in the future, when you can continue to pick up those first downs, how much more creative and how much more almost daring can Ludwig and Rising be on second down when you're that good on first down? But I mean, looking back at this game, I would say out of these last four that we've played, this was the most vanilla offense we saw or game plan that we saw out of the last four. And I'm not saying vanilla as in boring. I'm just saying a lot of three tight end personnel.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't spread UCLA out. outside of a few opportunities, we ran the ball. We did take a couple of deep shots, obviously, the flea flicker that maybe was just a tad underthrown. But there was not a lot of attempts down the field with the passing game. It was a very controlled passing game and just run the rock over and over and again. And again, when you can run for 290 yards, you really don't need to get super creative in the passing game because just keep feeding it. Just keep going to it. But to me, that's what was impressive is it wasn't a USC performance where we were throwing the ball all over the field and we put up that many points and that amount of yardage. It was a pretty vanilla game plan, and they still were able to accomplish that. To me, that's where I almost take more out of this win than the USC win. What they were able to do.
And I think that goes back to Cameron's comments earlier about the offensive line. I think either beforehand they saw what they were going to be able to do and executed it during this game, or as the game wore on, they thought, man, this personnel group, they can move the defensive tackles and pick up yardage, and they just kept going at it, just kept running it.
Well, I don't know that they saw that on film, because Kyle Whittingham's comments post-game said they're holding teams to 90 yards a game. And he said, if that happens to us, we will not win this game. And he challenged the offensive line to be able to go out there. And so I don't know that they saw it on film that they would be able to go and have success. But I think from Utah's standpoint is they wanted to invoke their will upon UCLA and say, we're going to do this.
Well, and they did, because if you look at their scoring drives, their first three scoring drives, all three were 75 yards. 9 plays, 10 plays, and 7 plays. So you got some long drives in there. And what you're saying, Ryan, it wasn't explosive plays that they were just scoring off of.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, a fluke play where a defender falls down and the wide receiver's wide open 40 yards down the field.
Or they're not even short fields, to your point.
And the fact that they could keep drives alive consistently throughout that game, there was some parts in that third quarter, and credit to UCLA, made some nice adjustments. But credit to this Utah offense, and I don't think this is something we've ever seen from a Utah team in quite some time, is for the offense to be as productive as it has been. Usually it's always been Utah's had to rely on their defense, get their offense in good field position, because the offense can't sustain drive for 75 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just sit back and just get entertained offensively. I mean, it's such a different change. And we'll talk about the defense. And the defense did have some moments and played really well in some moments. But it's almost just a complete switch of dynamics between this offense and defense from what you fans are accustomed to seeing, right? You can count throughout Whittingham's tenure, you've been able to just rely and say, our defense will get it done. We need to stop here. They'll get it done. Because they've done that so consistently.
Well, how many times in this podcast have we said, if the offense can put 30 points on the board, well, we've got a chance to win this game
right.
Because of the defense.
Because of the defense. And knowing how limited we were offensively, we had to rely upon that defense. And now it's just a complete switch. We now have confidence that the offense can go and score consistently. And you're just hoping that the defense can stop enough at this point.
Well, yeah, but look, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but if you go back to the ASU game, the second half, four possessions, 4 scores. Oregon State the following week, the first 2 possessions were touchdowns. The third possession was a field goal. We did get stopped a couple of times by stupid mistakes in that game. But for the most part, we moved the ball at will. And then in this game, 4 of the 5 first half possessions, I believe, were touchdowns. Little lull in the action in the third quarter. And then put 2 additional touchdowns in the fourth quarter. So for the most part, when the offense has the ball at this point, you're almost expecting a touchdown.
Which is good, because when the defense takes the field, you're almost expecting to give up a touchdown.
All right, we got to take a break. when we come back, I want to continue this on the offense, especially when I want to talk about the coin toss.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, in very un-Whittingham fashion, Utah wins the coin toss and elects to receive the ball to start the game. I love the aggressiveness from Utah, and after the game, Whittingham said they did it for two reasons. One, because their offense is rolling, and two, they want to get an extra possession on the offense because of Devin Lloyd not being in there the first half.
Yeah, good ideas.
Cam Rising was asked about it, and his whole philosophy is because we're going to score. That's why he wanted the ball. And I love that. I love the confidence that this team on the offense is showing. And it all starts with the leadership of Cam Rising and what he's doing for this offense.
Yeah, no, it's just that change in mentality that we've been talking about, that you're seeing from the offensive side a level of confidence that really we haven't seen since Urban Meyer in 2004. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could, because even in the 08 season where you go undefeated, you beat Bama in the Sugar Bowl, we didn't have an offense like that. You know, we were good,
and
enough
they,
in
and
some
they seemed games. To score when they needed to that
right.
year, but it wasn't like
they weren't a
give
juggernaut.
Us the ball and we were going to get a touchdown yeah. for you.
Well, I think even in the teams that went to the Pac-12 championship game, it was really ride or die with Zach Moss.
Right.
I mean, Tyler Huntley was an excellent player. Don't get me wrong on that. But the star was Zach Moss, and Zach Moss, you know, for a lot of issues that the offensive had, Zach Moss covered that up.
Sure.
It seems like now with this team so far in the season is it's collective. It's everyone from Tavion Thomas stepping up, Cam Rising stepping up, and the offensive line, which we've been praising, you know, all episode. Get the offensive line more mac and cheese. Because they're killing it.
Yeah, they're playing at a high level. And what I want to continue to see is obviously in this game, you only had two wide receivers catch balls. Britton Covey got three. Devon Bailey got three. Outside of that, Howard was never targeted.
Enos wasn't targeted.
Parks
was once.
Parks had one that was overthrown over his head. So again, that's one area where, and we've seen that through this four game stretch where the wide receivers have been really involved and pivotal in the success. And that's what I hope. Obviously, you got to utilize these tight ends because of how dominant and how good they are. But I just hope that we can continue to keep these guys engaged and involved in the offense, because if you got all of these guys involved, it just makes it tougher on a defense to defend.
And I wonder how much of it is because the wide receivers are banged up. And I was surprised to see Howard out there.
But he looked good.
He did look good. But right after the Oregon State game, there was questions of was it a season-ending
sure.
injury with him. Solomon Enos has missed a few games because being banged up. So, I mean, I agree
And I noticed, just to tag on to that, though, even Covey, even though he had three catches and was in on a few plays, he wasn't out there as much as he typically is. And maybe that's just because of the personnel groupings that were being successful, and they're just kept, well, this is working for us, so we're going to run with it. And Covey and some of those other wide receivers aren't part of those packages.
But I mean, even before we started recording, we were talking about in the Pac-12 championship game against Oregon, how they just double teamed Keithy the whole time. And that once they kind of took that away from Utah, then Utah really didn't have an answer for it. This year, this team, Scott, to your point, the wide receivers, they didn't get the production that they have been getting, but other guys were stepping up. What we called out, Keithy with 5 receptions, Kincaid with 3. And so while maybe the wide receivers could be banged up, that's why they're not getting the rep, or the game plan just didn't really open it up for them to be productive, it is nice and refreshing to see other guys in different positions stepping up and taking that workload, because this offense is humming along.
I'll tell you one guy that stepped up was our new punter.
Oh, all right. Can we just talk Thick Boy for a minute?
No Brad Paisley sightings this Saturday.
Thick Boy, did you see he got votes for Special Teams Player of the Week?
You know they came from local media. You know they did.
I like it. Clearly, and I don't know, it probably isn't going to work if you're pinned inside your own 5-yard line and have to punt. But when you're at midfield and it's 4th and 7 or 4th and 6, it works.
It works. It works now, right? But if you do this for 3 straight weeks,
it's going to get scouted, and
teams can make an adjustment. They're probably the nice thing about it is I don't know that a team is going to dedicate somebody in that situation that deep to be able to field a punt.
See, that's the thing I love, is because if you do have your safeties back to field, that opens up the field a little bit more, so you don't have to kick it.
Well, and I think on that second punt, he audibled into the punt. If you noticed, he lined up at a normal depth, looked over the defense, and then did his little gesture
to kill,
and then he took about 3 steps back before the ball was snapped. And so I think on that one, there was an option. If you like what you see, run the play. If you don't like what you see, check out of it and kick it, which I like, right? Because that just takes advantage of that point that you just made. If the defense is going to send maybe a safety back to try and field one of those punts, well, now you've only got 10 real defenders you got to worry mm-hmm. about. And maybe that's the look that you like, and you run your play, you pick up that first down. So it gives teams some options, but it will be interesting to see if that's something that they continue to use throughout the rest of the season, or if that's just going to be something you see in spot situations moving forward.
But I mean, it definitely has to be spot situations, because like Ryan pointed out, when you're deep in your own territory, you can't do that. You got to get a good punt.
Well,
you can
if you have no confidence in your punting unit.
Very true. But what I also like about him punting it, and clearly, I mean, he had experience in high school, so he knows what he's doing to a certain extent. But he put both of those punts inside the 10-yard line.
They both checked.
That safety was all because of Rising.
Oh, yeah.
They both backed up, both of those punts. I mean, it was like watching Hackett out there. Mm. We haven't had a punter that's really been able to consistently back him up since...
Wisnowski.
Well, Wisnowski did, but he wasn't quite as good as Hackett. Hackett had just an ability to consistently just drop it right where he needed to and not have it roll into the end zone. And obviously, Wisnowski was a super talent, but yeah, I mean, it was pretty incredible what he was able to do.
I mean, I want to keep talking about Rising. I do want to say I got to give credit to Shaw. Kickoffs were a lot better. Their tackling, it was amazing how UCLA kept bringing the ball out and they never got it to the 20.
Well, they brought it out because the ball wasn't kicked into the end zone. So you're almost forcing, you know, UCLA's hand there, catching at the 2-yard line. They got to run it at that point.
Yes, but the fact that the coverage was down there and made
good
tackles, because that's one thing we have harped on, right, with the special teams. And it is them not being able to hold guys in check and them getting past the 25, which is for me is the kind of, you know, the telltale side of how well you're covering your kickoffs.
And I agree with all that, but where I stand, every ball, kick it out of the back of the end zone.
I agree.
Because I don't trust this special teams unit as far as I can throw them.
I agree. I'm a firm believer, just kick it out, but... For the ones that didn't go out, they weren't touchbacks. I will give Shaw credit and the special teams credit. There was good
coverage, for sure.
So let's pick it to Cam Rising. Cam Rising, 17 of 27, 179 yards, one touchdown in the air. I think one thing that I saw that, you know, we kind of talked about in the game is Rising isn't locked on a receiver anymore. And we saw that in his first game against Washington State, how he just stare guys down. He has progressed so much. It's surprisingly to think he still is under 10 games in a college career.
That's that growth.
Six now, seven now.
That's that growth that you're seeing is he's progressing at a really good rate and he's making good decisions, right? He's only got two picks on the season. Well, those two picks came on one, a bad throw, and one just kind of an unlucky situation.
The fluke
against
with
ASU.
Fotheringham, right?
Yeah. And outside of that, he's got no picks on the year outside of that game. So he's protecting the ball, yet he's still being aggressive. And some of those he's fitting into really tight windows. And that ball to Keithy down the sideline towards the UCLA sideline in the first quarter, and that was a beautiful throw.
Only where he could get it.
Well, and it was on a rope. It was just pretty to watch.
I am all in on Cam Rising. I don't think it's a coincidence that the team started playing better when he's in there. Is he the sole reason? No. But everyone just says what a great leader he is. And it doesn't matter if it's third and long or whatnot. They believe in what he's saying in the huddle. And I think that just kind of spreads out the whole offense. I think that's where you're seeing that confidence come in.
Now, if you guys remember, our longtime listeners will remember this fondly. Back in 2019, our love of Tyler Huntley.
Why do we let him take control, Ryan?
Guys, we're back on the pottery wheel. Rising has put us back on the pottery wheel. There he is.
Scott,
if you folks can only see Scott right now,
Scott
fondling pottery, fake pottery.
We're forming, creating a nice base.
Scott can't be trusted with the equipment here.
Rising has got us in a place where it's just magic is happening, guys.
Well, if this was only a video podcast, you guys would be dying.
It feels good to have a quarterback play like this again, doesn't it? We get these moments on the podcast.
I'm sure his soft hands are nice on that pottery wheel.
I bet he knows how to throw a bowl, as they say in the pottery world.
Oh my gosh, Scott!
How I let you take control sometimes? I don't know.
Tell ya, Cam. Cam, take the wheel, buddy. Take the wheel, Cam.
I got nothing.
I can't follow this up. I can't follow this up.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying Cam Rising.
I know. I clearly know you're not speaking to me, Scott.
Take the wheel, Cam. Take over. Finish the pottery. Finish the piece.
All the way to the Rose Bowl, baby.
We're here the whole way. My hands are on your hands. Let's work this together.
I don't know. This is a family show. I don't know what to say.
I could feel his presence.
Oh my gosh, Scott. Are you done with your pottery?
I'm in the moment here, gentlemen.
Oh my gosh.
One by one, the listeners are dropping off.
Wow.
That 64 completion percentage. Pull it through.
Yeah.
All right, so if you're still with us, and I don't know where Scott is. Physically, he's here. I don't know where he is mentally.
I'm cleaning up over on the pottery wheel here.
Somewhere with Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze.
That's what Cam's play is doing to me. It's magic, gentlemen.
All right, I got to go to break. I got to go to break. Rethink where this episode's going. We'll be right back.
Hey, lead us to the break at the end of that song. That's right, boys.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. I've taken full control of the board. No more Scott. Whenever he does it, it's either like Neil Diamond. What's that song? I can't remember. Neil Diamond.
Sweet Caroline.
Sweet Caroline.
Unchained Melody.
We've done a little Lionel Richie.
We have done Lionel Richie. Oh. You did like some curse thing a couple years ago.
Fernando.
We'll have to bring Fernando back on.
Didn't he also do like a Willie Nelson tribute or something, or like a...
We've done a number of things here. we've done a variety of... Field of Dreams has made the show a few times. But right now we got the magic feeling from Cam.
All right, so let's go in the defense. I think the defense played better. It's not the same defense Utah's put out year after year. But I think they're making strides. They're making improvements. They are banged up. They do have some injuries. Devin Lloyd missed the whole first half because of the terrible targeting call the week prior. Clark Phillips is playing the nickel. But as much as that's all getting moved around, as much as the youth is there, I still think this defense is getting better.
I think you're right. I think just in this game alone, I think we saw an improvement from start to finish. I mean, earlier in that game, they were matching us. We'd score a touchdown, they'd score a touchdown. And as the game wore on, we figured out ways to stop them and get their offense off the field.
If there's one thing that is alarming for this game on the defense, they did hold UCLA to 4 of 16 on third down, but they allowed them to go 7 of 9 on fourth down.
That's a Chip Kelly thing, though.
Well, but it was also where they stood on the field. They were consistently near the 50 or on the other side where they felt comfortable enough. And I think part of it is they just don't respect our defense.
Oh, for sure.
That they knew, hey, we're going to go for it and we're going to get it against these guys. And part of that was they were in third and long quite a bit, which is why they didn't convert a lot of those third downs, but they were able to get chunks. So that fourth down was pretty manageable, and then they were able just to pick up that fourth and two, fourth and four, fourth and five pretty consistently throughout the night. But I think you're starting to see, obviously, we're really thin at corner right now, and we're young. But to put that point, second half was definitely better than the first half, or at least I should say the first quarter. Second quarter... Got some stops. Got that mm-hmm. first interception. It feels like it's been forever since we've had a momentum swinging turnover, and so that pick was huge. I think that's huge for these guys to give them some confidence to know, hey, we've done it. We can do it again. But
it's also the small things. I mean, look how many batted balls we had in this game.
Yeah,
we haven't seen even that recently.
No, how Tai Pututau had himself a game.
Oh yeah,
he may have just had two, or it was either two or three of those batted down passes. Obviously, he had that huge safety really that sealed the game there in the fourth quarter. He was rock solid, and that's good to see considering, you know, he kind of lost his job early on in the season. So him coming back playing at really a high level, and you're seeing spurts of these young guys on the defensive line who you saw it from Fillinger, you're seeing it from Tafuna, that they have moments where they play really, really well and are getting the job done. It's just that consistency, staying in your lane, playing, doing your job, play after play after play. And obviously it helped getting Devin Lloyd back on the field.
Well, and I think, you know, a lot of that is just because of youth. They got to get those reps. They kind of got to build that consistency. And I think that's what's helping the offense is because there are the veterans is definitely on the offensive side of the ball. But on the defensive side of the ball, with Lloyd being out in that first half, I really thought the defense played well. I was kind of nervous with Lloyd not being there because Lloyd covers up a lot of mistakes by this team. He really is the consistent defensive player that can get pressure on the quarterback. That's one area I'm still concerned about is Utah's just not getting pressure, timely pressure on the quarterback. But again, it's a young defense. They're learning. They're getting better. And for having guys banged up, like what you said, Scott, they're thin, especially in the secondary. They're playing better.
And we're seeing what the potential could be in the next year or two as well. I think these guys have the potential to turn into the defenses we've seen in years past.
Okay, I totally agree with that. But is this team, as this defense, as we sit right now, or a month from now when we're potentially playing for a Pac-12 title, are they good enough to win a Pac-12 title? The offense is good enough. Is the defense good enough?
We're seeing the defense right now, I think, gets gashed by Oregon.
I would agree.
Can in the next month, right? Because you've seen some progress in the last month. You give them another month. Can we make enough progress in the next month to be good enough?
It's a lot to ask in 1 month. I mean, we've seen improvements over this season, we've seen improvements over the last month, but to get to, Oregon, as everybody knows, can move the ball.
Oregon State moved the ball on them week ago.
I've got PTSD about facing Oregon in a Pac-12 title game. Makes me nervous.
We need you, Fernando.
And who knows if it's Oregon? I mean, the Pac-12 is so wacky. Who knows who's going to be up there?
Well, let's kind of look over these standings and kind of, because Pac-12 has been nuts the last couple of weeks.
It is nuts. We got to go to a break. Well, let's fire up the standings and we'll come back. Let's jump into Utah, Stanford, and some Pac-12 talk.
All right, let's break down the North and South divisions, because these last few weeks have been just absolutely bonkers with what's going on. Obviously, you know, you see Cal goes in and absolutely just runs roughshod over Oregon State a week after they did that to us.
39-25.
Absolutely crazy. I did not see that one coming. Obviously, Washington State goes in and manhandles ASU at ASU.
Washington beat Stanford. It's the Pac-12. You never know. It's so unpredictable.
You never do. And that's why literally the standings almost change week to week because of so many upsets. Obviously, in the North Division, Oregon is on top right now. They've got a 4-1 conference record. But the thing that looms large with Oregon is Washington State is right behind them, as is Oregon State and even Washington, and they've got all three teams left to play on that schedule. Mm-hmm. So even though Oregon's in the driver's seat at the moment, it's not a guarantee. Especially they got to come to Salt Lake. If we can beat them here, that would be a huge loss, and potentially seeing what happens the rest of the way. Obviously Oregon's going to be probably the favorite, but at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if Washington State, Oregon State, or even Washington is representing the North in the championship game.
Can you imagine
if
Jimmy Lake pulls that off?
I don't see that happening.
I don't think so either. But this will be this week is critical for Washington.
But Washington State has played a lot better since we beat them.
Yeah, their only loss is to BYU.
The week that half their coaching staff was gone.
Half their coaching staff was gone. Oh, and it was a non-conference game. So it's like when you play BYU, it doesn't matter the result because it doesn't have any bearing on what you're doing. And so, ultimately, yeah, the North is kind of up in the air still. The South, not so much, guys.
South is a little bit more clear, basically because of tiebreakers. Utah sits the top at 4-1. ASU's right below them at 3-2. UCLA and USC at 3-3 in the conference. But if you look at it, Utah has the tiebreaker over every single team there.
And the nice thing is Utah still has Colorado and Arizona left on the schedule. That helps.
And one of those is at home. And really, the Arizona game shouldn't matter where it's played.
It'll be a scrimmage because there's going to be no ASU or Arizona fans in attendance. Really, the two games that are really of utmost importance left on Utah's schedule is this week at Stanford and then 3 weeks home to Oregon. I'm a little nervous about this Stanford game. I'm nervous because we're not in the comfy confines of Rice-Eccles.
And I think that's where youth comes into play, is it seems like younger teams, like what we were talking about, the defense, they tend to play better at home than on the road. The thing with Stanford is you look at them 2-4 in conference, and you wouldn't think much about that, except their two wins are against Oregon and USC.
Right. Which tells you they have the ability to put a game together and play really well. They don't do it consistently, but they do have that ability. And if you're paying attention to the Pac-12, that's kind of a worst-case scenario for a young Utah team going on the road, right, where they didn't perform all that well last road game.
The difference, though, is Oregon State Stadium was packed loud. Stanford is going to be like playing at home. Stanford has no fans cheering for them.
No, it'll be a primarily empty stadium on a Friday night, no less, right? So it's not even a Saturday game, late Friday evening. They're not, that fan base is not going to show up. So environment-wise, that is huge for Utah. You're not going to have a tough environment to play in. But you've seen it. You've seen it at times throughout this year. Stanford is able to play well in moments, and they've got a good young quarterback in McKee.
Mm-hmm.
He is young, but he was a highly recruited kid, and he's put up some pretty impressive numbers so far this season. The thing that stands out to me about Stanford is we're so used to them having just kind of a stud at the running back position.
Yeah, a power run game.
Run game with a guy that just can scare you, right, and just run all over you. They don't really have that this year. It's really kind of by committee, and they don't have any one guy that really stands out. Now, granted, they're still talented guys, but, they're only averaging 91 yards per game on the ground this year. So, and they're giving up over 206 a game on the ground defensively.
That bodes well for us.
That does bode well. If we can go in and run the ball and not allow them in turn to run it down our throats like Oregon State did, that's going to speed this game up, keep that clock moving, and that'll be huge for this game for the Utes. Because I don't know, man. I'm just nervous about this.
I see this game playing out as a Whittingham special, like run the ball, run the clock. Time of possession is going to be huge in this one. I can see it as a trap game. I'm not as nervous as you are.
Yeah, and I'm probably putting too much emphasis on the fact that it's a road game. I've got a lot of confidence when Utah's playing in Rice-Eccles. That environment, especially with a young team, they play well at home. Whereas we haven't. I mean, you go to BYU, did not play well. You go to San Diego State, did not play well. You go to Oregon State. Offensively, played well a good chunk of that game. Defensively, you did absolutely nothing. And so that's, I'm almost looking at the history of this team on the road and kind of calculating that into kind of where I'm feeling comfort level wise on this game. But if Utah can go out and do that, if they can run the ball and run it effectively against Stanford, I think we'll be in really good shape. But I'm telling you, they're gonna test our secondary. McKee can throw the ball, and they're gonna throw it a lot.
Well, and if you're Stanford, and I mean that's where you're gonna attack this Utah defense, is that young secondary. When you have a quarterback the way that they do, and the fact that they're not as explosive in the run play or in the run game as they have been in years prior under Shaw, you know that's what they're gonna do. And so it's, can Utah's defense really limit them through the air, much like what Utah did against UCLA? Kind of that bend and don't break defense. I think what we've been seeing week after week, I kind of expect that. I think this is going to be more of a high-scoring game than maybe the Stanford games in the past. I kind of see it mirroring the UCLA game, to be honest with you.
If Utah is able to score essentially at will like they have been the last few games, yeah, I think Utah puts a lot of points on the board, and I don't think Stanford can keep up with that.
Well, Stanford's only averaging 24 on the season right now, so they're not, you know, they're not a high scoring team. Last week they only put up 20 points. They only put up 13 last
and Oregon
week.
State is the highest scoring offense in the Pac-12,
right?
And so you have to give them credit. I mean, defensively, we did not play well, but give OSU credit. So, and I think with their lack of a running game, it gives the opportunity for the defensive line to really focus on getting pressure on the quarterback.
And that, I think that's going to be key, especially on a young quarterback, is he's going to throw the ball. And, you know, I'm looking at his stats, you know, he's got 51 rushing attempts on the season, 142 yards through the ground. So it's not like he's a stiff back there. He does have the ability to run. But it is going to be, it's going to be pivotal that this defensive line, and you saw that against UCLA, they were able to put pressure on Garbers throughout the game. They just couldn't get him down.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty agile back there, and just kind of would be able to sidestep pressure, find an opening and get out of there. And Tafua, or Mika Tafua, he was right there. I mean, he probably could have had 4+ sacks the other night. He just could not get there and really finish the play. And I think that's going to be the key, is defensive line's got to keep that pressure up, but they've got to be able to finish a little bit better than what we saw against UCLA.
All right, before we get into our Utah-Stanford scores, let's go and kind of just look over the Pac-12. I know we just broke down the standings, but the games last week, we kind of mentioned it. I think the big game is Cal beating Oregon State 39-25. No one saw that one coming. That is not, as I said, this, you never know what's going to happen in the Pac-12, especially this year.
Well, and that's where you see an Oregon State that they're not ready. They're still a young team learning that, you know, they were flying high after beating Utah and doing what they did to us. And you could see they just didn't handle that success all that well to really just get hammered by a pretty average below average Cal team.
Below average Cal team. A special thank you to Washington State for beating Arizona State 34-21. There's rumors Herm could be out of a job.
I don't think he survives this. If you're going to cheat,
on top of the sanctions,
if you're going to cheat, you better play for a Pac-12 title, right? In today's world, if you're going to cheat, your cheating has to produce something. It hasn't.
Sean Miller at Arizona.
Yeah.
For example. Another coach that's rumored on the hot seat after this past weekend, Chip Kelly.
Yep.
I saw that floating around online, which I'm actually kind of surprised.
I am.
I think they've progressed.
They've gotten better, and I think obviously the fan base wants them to get better faster. They've steadily been getting better year over year, but it hasn't been a fast climb for them.
And I think probably their fans more so than anybody else, but I think a lot of us expected Chip Kelly to come in and turn it into Oregon.
Oregon 2.0.
Yeah. And that hasn't happened as of yet.
Well, and that's not going to happen unless you invent a new aspect of an offense, right? That's why he was so good at Oregon, is because he was running something that people weren't. And it was new, and people, it took time to figure out how to defend it. And then he had athletes that just could outspeed everybody. And obviously, you know, UCLA, they still recruit pretty well, probably not as well as they should considering where they're located and just their brand name. But you know what? I've kind of turned into a Chip Kelly fan.
Just because of the way he's reacted to this.
No, I mean, it's not just over the last few weeks. It's just over time. Like when he first got hired at UCLA, I still kind of had that Oregon hate for him. And he just seems like a good dude.
I would agree. I mean, I obviously none of us know him personally,
sure.
But how he's come across, especially in the wake of the Aaron Lowe and Ty Jordan and his remarks and how he brought the team in and put flowers at the 22 and some of his comments, I would say, yeah, he leans towards being a good dude.
Well,
way different than what you kind of envisioned him being when he coached at Oregon.
Right. And you know, Whittingham has high praise for him as well. And so, yeah, I don't know whether I want him to stay for the sake of the Utes, whether I want him to stay or whether I want him to go in a different direction. But it will be interesting to see where that one shakes out.
I honestly would be surprised if the administration there fires him so quickly. He's not, he was a big name hire. It's not like some guy you went out and took a risk on and it's not panning out after 4 years.
Yeah, but they also are paying him a lot of money, and that money they may be saying, the results you're giving us is not worth what we're paying you. And that could ultimately be a factor in that too. Because their fan base does not seem to be super thrilled with him, and they're almost ready for a change. But, you know, that's all they do. That's all they've done since we've joined the program, is just keep changing and staying about the same. So,
yeah, but to be honest with you, as good as an athlete as DTR is, he's so inconsistent. And that's part of your problem right there.
Well, and that's partly where I think, I mean, Garbers is only a freshman.
I was really impressed with Garbers.
And he that was his first ever start in probably the toughest venue to play in the Pac-12, outside of maybe Oregon. And I thought he handled himself pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he definitely had a couple inaccurate throws, but you're going to get that from any quarterback, really. But he managed the offense well. He kept them moving. He didn't have any big mistakes. The interception really wasn't on him. It was just a great play by the defensive line to bat it up in the air and pick it.
He honestly played better than Jaden Daniels played.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would agree. And the fact that he's only a freshman and with an offensive-minded coach in Chip Kelly, you know, I think if they hold on to Kelly, you know, I think with him at quarterback in a few years, they could actually be a really tough out.
Oh yeah, well, and the offensive line that he played against on Saturday, it's top notch.
Yeah,
and so you have all of those, and then you keep Kelly in there, the consistency of that head coach. I think things are on the rise. I wouldn't let him go if I was an administrator there, but. Money talks.
Money does talk.
Looking at games this week, as we mentioned, Oregon, Washington play a big game there. And then another one to keep an eye on this weekend, ASU and SC play. Are we Trojan fans this week? Do we have to fight on?
I don't know that we even have to root for either one of them at this point. Yeah, it probably makes sense to root for USC because it gives us one more.
Gives it a little cushion.
A little more cushion, even though we have the tiebreaker. But
I think I'm always gonna go Dirty Trojans over ASU.
Fight on.
Because either way it's not really gonna affect Utah one way or the other. And anytime you can see ASU get buried, I'll go help throw a little bit of dirt on them.
All right, let's get into this Utah Stanford. Utah is traveling up to Stanford, Friday night game. That makes me a little nervous as well. Short week and you're traveling. Vegas as we're recording this, has Utah as a 7-point favorite.
I like it. I always like when Vegas has confidence in the Utes.
Scott, so where you like that? What's your score? Who do you got winning?
Yeah, man. I think the Utes offensively continue to roll. I think we're gonna put points up on the board. I'm gonna go Utah 41, Stanford 28.
Ryan, where are you going?
I too think the Utes keep rolling. I don't see any reason why this offense cannot continue to put points on the board. And I think, again, it's a little high scoring on the Ute side. I'm going to go 45-24.
I'm right along with you guys. I have Utah 42-24 over the trees. That will do it for this episode. Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Drum and Feather. Drum, the letter N, Feather.
And Scott?
Yeah, UteMan_forever.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Utah Man Podcast, at our home, utahmanpodcast.com. And anywhere you listen to a podcast, we are there. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. And hopefully Utah gets another big win this Friday against the Trees. And go Utes.
Go Utes.
Go Utes. We'll be till I die. Kayai. Finish it off, Utes.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.